decade was different, and moving through each one was critical. And if you hadn't moved from one to the other, you would have been left behind.
Yes.
Right? And whether you're sort of the last one to move or the first one to move, make the move happen, right?
It's Sanjay Nandi, CEO of the iconic Pasha Group. Pasha is one of the world's most iconic nightclubs where heritage, music and glamour combine. What would you say has been the biggest challenge you've had to overcome in the business as a leader?
You know, for anyone in hospitality.
Thank you for coming on the show.
No, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. So first off, how did you come to be working with Pasha in the first place?
Yeah, it's obviously a question I get a lot. I mean, most of my friends would happily trade jobs with me.
I bet.
Except when they see me at the nightclub not drinking, and then it's a different experience. But no, I started at Pasha now. This is my seventh season, so
okay.
Yeah, 7 years ago. I had actually, if I step back a bit, I started off in finance and banking, and even though I had a real passion for hospitality, which probably started when, you know, growing up around the dinner table at home, and my dad was in the Navy, and he would have for some reason these sort of hosting dinners for foreign dignitaries, politicians, business leaders, and my mom was like a walking, talking CRM, right? Like the customer relationship manager.
Yeah.
And, you know, and just entertaining people at the dinner table was a big thing. You know, what people like, what wine they drink, you know, who you put next to whom. And yeah, that kind of training early on, it really, really stuck with me. And so it was always, you know, an industry that... it's an industry that's highly likable, of course.
Yeah.
But then, you know, I spent time in finance and banking, but always with my heart in hospitality, trying to do deals on, you know, whether it's pubs, restaurants, etc. So, you know, so in that side of banking. And then about, 10 years ago, I stepped away to work on sort of new restaurant projects here in London. And I think through some of that experience and some conversations, I got asked to whether I would consider doing like 2 days a week at Pasha in the winter. So, you know, to understand the nuts and bolts of the company and things like that. And I think that, you know, even though it was sort of off season, I think being in Ibiza and understanding what the brand means to everyone was just truly shocking. I mean, it is a brand that I loved and I knew before, but really what it stands for and all the things you said in the introduction, absolutely right. So it started off as a, sort of 2 day a week thing, and then of course moved to, you know, I was running operations for a couple of seasons, and then sort of expansion around the world, mostly with the Leo brand, which, you know, we can talk about.
Yeah.
And then 2 years ago, now I've been CEO for 2 years.
Amazing. And tell me a little bit about the dinner parties your father used to throw then. So, where do you get such an eclectic group of people together? So he was working for the Navy at the time.
Yes. I mean, I think he was sort of, you know, involved in a part of the Navy which was looking to, you know, exert influence around the world, and so as a result there would be this eclectic group of people that would show up, and very, you know, each group would be very different from the other, and you know, whether it was the food or the wine or the scotch or the music, you know, you had to know what was going to work.
Yeah.
And you know, despite my age, I was still had to head up like one of the tables. And
really?
talk to
how old were you back then, Sanjay?
15, 16, right. and you know, and of course they would humor me, and it was, but for me it was, you know, very serious and very proud, telling all these stories. So yeah, I think that's where it started.
Interesting, interesting. And can you remember like what your first experience of the Pasha Group was? Had you been to Ibiza on a holiday, or had you been to a restaurant? Or
yeah, I had been. I'd been to Ibiza before, you know, a few times. But I think my favorite story is usually like a full circle story where we went out, as people usually go Thursday night. You get in and you go straight to David Guetta's David Guetta at Pacha, who that time had the Fuck Me I'm Famous party. So you go straight there, and we couldn't really afford anything, but we managed to blag our way to like the cheapest VIP seats, which are up against the wall right at the back. And I remember thinking, wow, I mean, you could feel the energy of the space, the fact that you walk through the kitchen and you come in. It's like it's basically a Spanish finca turned super club, right? So, that's what distinguishes Pasha. So one of the many areas of distinction between Pasha and, say, Amnesia, or that time Space or yeah. High, I mean, it's not a warehouse structure, right? Like, it's a house. So you walk through and, you know, different parts of the club are connected to each other in that way, almost as you were walking through a house, right? Mm. And so we were up against the wall towards the back, and it was great. I mean, the vision was slightly obstructed, not just by the alcohol, but by, you know, how the columns and things were. So one of the things I did, you know, after joining the company, taking over, was to clear the sight lines from the back. So it nice. Does improve the experience.
Yeah.
We increased the size of the dance floor. So, you know, increased the space for people who pay tickets and reduced the amount of VIP. I always say this is, you know, Pasha is more flower power than money power, right?
Yeah.
Like, so it's about the people and so up against the wall. But as I tell you the story, most recently we had some of our biggest nights. We had the DJ Solomon playing together with Kanye Music, you know, and of course everything gets sold out. And so, you know, we have owners' tables, but every time the price is achieved, it gets sold and I move further back. And so for that night, I was up against the wall again, right? Even though I was CEO, you know, and I had some investors and friends who I was hosting, but again, all the way at the back, at least I was on the right side of the wall.
Brilliant. Right? And was that was like for the 50th anniversary?
That was for the 50th anniversary. So.
funny. Yeah, I've got like one of those kind of full circle moments. I remember going to Ibiza for the first time in like late 90s, and then literally having every, you know, and seeing the you know, the club, the harbour, and just recognising the logo straight away, even though, you know, I didn't know anything obviously about Ibiza, having never been there before, but, you know, with a group of friends. And it's funny, like through the years we've gone from like, you know, staying in a, you know, really small, cheap, nasty place in like San Antonio to then having a villa up in the hills where you could see like Manumission and Amnesia and stuff like that, right through to a full circle moment going on like the first package holiday with the kids and literally going down to the beach in the morning with the kids with a, you know, like spades and all of that, and literally seeing people coming out of the nightclubs, and then me and my wife look at each other and going, this isn't how it was meant to be, you know. But I'm sure we're not the only ones who've kind of been through that journey, you know.
But just to say, no, I mean, Ibiza is like that. It's a fantastic, a magical island, and there's stuff for everyone to do. Of course, everyone knows it for the clubs and the music, but, you know, it's beautiful. The hikes have been on, and, you know, and the markets, and yeah, it's such a fun place to be no matter what age.
It is, and Ibiza town, again, I've done that with just my, at the time, girlfriend, now wife, and gone for like the romance, you know, inside the yes. old city wall. And correct. Just done like restaurant experience and not gone to a club and had like the most amazing time as well.
Still do that with my wife. So we do one day on, one day off, right? One day in the club, the next day either
that.
The beach or something romantic. Yeah.
Yeah. That's very good. And was there anything that drew you to the brand at that time, given the position you're now? You clearly could have gone in many different directions and having had a kind of heritage in hospitality as well.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, I suppose I didn't really really understand the power of Pasha, the brand. It was something that I'd heard of, obviously, and recognized the logo, and you know, I knew there was stuff I could learn there and contribute. But I think I was blown away by what it means to the people of the island. In the years that I was running operations, I was obviously on the island, working there, and I would get stopped on the street, and had conversation about Pasha, and but what are you doing about this, and when are you bringing that party back? And it was always a sense of ownership of the island of Pasha, right? Like, and it was you realize very quickly that you're a custodian for of the brand. For the people, right? And therefore, some of the things that I did was bring back the local sort of card that gets you in to most events. And then, we recently, last week, I was in Ibiza for the event that we have in Ibiza town, which, we help the town organize, and Solomon plays in Ibiza town, which, we help contribute. So, it's all this stuff that, giving back to the island and understanding that this brand is as much theirs as it is ours. Mm. And then from then on, moving to business development when I was traveling the world, whether it was from Tokyo in the east to, Tulum, or even further, Vegas and Cabo in the west. People know about the brand. Like they say, oh, wow, Pasha, great. And I would meet, various industry leaders in these towns, wherever I was. And, Steve Wynn, I remember saying, oh, yeah, Pasha, great. Leo. And he'd ask questions specific about Leo. And really? They've all been. And in Hong Kong, I met the owner of Dragon Eye, which is like the top nightclub there. Of course, my job involves traveling all these places and going to all the nightclubs. Yeah. But and he said, oh, I remember, Leo, yeah, you had a very expensive table. And then at the end of the show, when the dinner show finished, they said, would you like to stay for the club? And I said, yes. And they sold me they sold me another table. And then when it was time to go to the club, I just got up, they turned the table around, and it was the same table. So you sold me the table twice. Right?
Like,
and he's like, and I love that. That's what I do here now, right? Like, so it's all these things, in terms of how the brand travels both within the island and outside. Great stories.
Yeah, Wynn Hotel. That's the best breakfast I've ever had in Vegas. I've been to Vegas a lot with Virgin Atlantic, obviously, as well. It's the best breakfast I've ever had over there. I still remember it. I can still picture it in my mind's eye.
Yeah, must have been at Sedell's, I think, which is the breakfast place. But okay, yeah.
And I always like when you're talking about speaking to the locals in Ibiza town. It reminded me of. Again, I don't know if he still does it because I haven't been in the airline since 2009. But I always remember. Richard Branson, whenever Richard was on board the plane, instead of literally just sitting in an upper class seat and watching movies for 8 hours, he would get a seat. And I know some of that's probably for show and build a personal brand, but getting a seat in economy and then spending the flight walking around, chatting to the customers with a pen and a pad of paper and just writing stuff down, getting their feedback. And I just thought at the time, you're kind of impressionable 20-year-old something at the time, thinking, wow, okay, that's pretty cool that he's actually doing that. When you look back and you think of that, you're getting feedback right at the coalface, right in the trenches, essentially.
No, I mean, really well said, and he's obviously been one of the guys out there, role models out there to watch in this industry. I think, to be honest, some industries need more of it, and some you can get away with not doing it. I think in hospitality you absolutely have to. I mean. Leadership is, what I'm saying is leadership is different in different industries. I mean, for me, basically, it's about sort of having a vision and communicating that vision. But you know, in hospitality, you have, you know, youngsters who are at the who are client facing, right? And the kitchen staff or the porters who are indirectly client facing, and you know, interacting. You know, what I found, what, you know, where I spend a lot of my time is divided between other people's venues. So okay. Visiting other people's venues, understanding what's happening and changing, not just in Ibiza, I mean, around the world, as I said, but also when I'm within our venues, it is, you know, doing the whole customer journey every time I go. So you're going through the entrance of the GA, and then you walk through the VIP, you go through the toilets, you go through the kitchen, you speak to the guys everywhere, because you learn so much. And as a result, when I'm doing it with friends or investors, you know, you don't realize how different that is and how noticeable it is when you know things about their parents or where they're actually from and things like that. I mean, I don't think you do that because it's a nice thing to do. I think you do that because it makes you a better leader, and you understand what the problems are and you go ahead and fix them. I mean, nothing annoys me more to know that, you know, people who are waiters, for example, or managers spend more time on sort of infrastructure related stuff rather than dealing with clients, right? I mean, so the infrastructures should be fixed and most of their complaints are not about their actual job, but about them doing something else that's not really their job, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But it's key, isn't it? And it's, I always think that I had the best training in customer service from Virgin when I literally left uni and went to travel the world for free, ultimately, working for Virgin and having that customer service, like fast forward on a number of decades, like me and my wife, wherever we go, it's, you know, just watch it like a hawk, how your table service is. We're just on, me and my friends on a golf break that weekend before last, and it was, you know, you just really notice things and note down and have a little word, you know, if things aren't as you expect them, given, you know, what you're paying and what the experience is actually marketed as, and if you don't get that experience. So you mentioned vision there. Interested to know, Sanjay, how much of the original vision for Pasha are you familiar with, like, another Richard Ergel, isn't it, set the club up in 1973?
Yeah, no, it's important, you know. I know this has been said a lot, right? Like, to know where you're going, you need to know where you came from, right? Mm-hmm. And for a brand like Pasha, it's extremely important. You could spend, you know, millions on, or hundreds of thousands on consultants, McKinsey, whatever, but, you know, what you learn from understanding the history and what people will tell you almost for free, apologetically even, right? Like, you're getting sort of free advice. But, you know, the club, like you said at the start, you know, founded in 73. And then the 70s was basically Ricardo and his brother, Petey, that we used to travel to the UK in the off season and look for sort of new music and come back with these LPs and get stopped at the border and like, well, why are you carrying like 500 LPs? and then they would play the music in the club. And people would love it, right? Because it's music that they hadn't heard before and wasn't, you know, available in Spain. And so it caught on. The 80s was more of the Movida culture, so focused around Madrid, Pasha Madrid. And in Ibiza at that time, it was, you know, two DJs playing back to back into the, you know, early hours of the morning, open air. I think things sort of, towards the late 80s and early 90s, that's when sort of the creativity of Pasha came to its fore, right? Like, because they had all these party ideas. So you had Pelos Locos, which is like crazy hair. So everybody came up dressed up with like crazy hair. You had the white party, which now is quite common, I suppose. You had the beach party where the dance floor was covered in sand. God forbid, I don't know how long it takes to clean that. The Mr. and Miss party, where you have, you know, judging and stuff like that. And actually, if you know Pasha well, the right behind the DJ is probably the most expensive place to be, is called Jurado, because that's where the jury used to sit for the Mr. and Miss party. In the early 90s. So all the crazy parties. And then I think things changed towards, towards 2000s, all the big sort of music labels came in, Ministry of Sound, Renaissance, etc.
Yeah.
But they would, you know, test the music at Pacha to see, you know, what the reaction was before releasing it elsewhere. And so for them, it was great. But for the clients, for, you know, for people coming to Pacha, it was great because you hear new stuff before anyone's heard it. Which, by the way, still happens, right?
I was going to say, because
it still happens.
If, you know,
still
we happens. Didn't have the internet and social media, and
exactly.
You can do Spotify or Apple, but I'm guessing the DJs would still like have, you know, white labels.
Oh my goodness! Yes,
test it.
I mean, I do that. I do it in May. I mean, I come back to the history, but like April, May, when I'm back home, you know, it's happened a few times. So now the kids are aware, right? And they're like, so what's playing now? You know, and I share my playlist from April and May. And they tell their friends, and then by sort of by August, it's in the charts, right? And at that time, they haven't heard it yet, right? Like, so it's like
that's
oh wow,
cool.
That's so cool.
Yeah, you get bonus points.
You get bonus definitely. Points. And then I think after the big labels came sort of EDM, so say Roger Sanchez, David Guetta, Swedish House Mafia, etc. But then at that point, I think it became quite big noise, big rooms, and Pacha sort of moved towards more underground style of music, you know, which is where it is now, with Luciano and Solomon, and that sort of distinguishes Pacha now. So you can see that over the years, there's creativity constantly innovating, you know, and you still see Pacha sort of moving before, or almost trend-setting rather than following a trend. And, you know, it's not that easy. I mean, I've been at the company, like I said, my seventh season, and this year we've got, you know, like 7 days a week, all our residencies, like fantastic. And as a result, you know, the great results, best results ever. So,
really?
Yeah.
Oh, congratulations. That's brilliant. Good to know. Wow. And do you see that... like real resurgence, so we haven't talked about it yet, but coming off the back of a pandemic and the events industry literally being, you know, mothballed, etc. Do you see that as continuing to, well, clearly with the results, but the demand, do you see that, Dean, throughout your industry?
Yes, I mean, it was a very, very difficult time for everyone in the not just in the industry, but specifically for the industry, and especially the nighttime economy and nightclubs, probably the worst hit. And so I think one of the things I realized, and this is pre COVID, was, you know, how people would say our Pacha is just, you know, unique. It's all about Ibiza, and it, you know, and it's and so for me the expansion of the group, because we have other brands in there, not just Pacha. Mm-hmm. The expansion of the group was best served through a concept called Lio. So it's L-I-O, which in Spanish means crazy or messy. And it's a sort of dinner show. So you have dinner, you watch a show, and then it turns into a nightclub. And so you're there for a longer, you know, period of time. Your average length of stay is longer than if you were at a restaurant or if you were at a club. And you don't have to go outside again and stand in line again. And, you know, so it's all there. It's all contained. Yeah. And this sort of experiential offering around dinner, again, is similar to, you know, growing up, where, you know, we'd have a chat, move to dinner, have dinner, music, dancing, etc. So, you know, having the long night where you're entertained all the way through, I think, was key. So taking that that brand, I think, through COVID, you know, we had to decide, okay, we're obviously, you know, having to shut down our operations, but we're going to use this time to further develop the concept and to look for, you know, spaces, which was slightly easier to get at that time, you know, in various markets that are similar to Ibiza. So we managed to secure a site in Palma, Mallorca, Tito's, which, you know, has been around 80, 90 years, and it's a cabaret dinner show venue, always has been. And, you know, we've returned that to its glory days. And, you know, if you're ever in Palma, you should come and see it on the waterfront. Fantastic. And we did the same here in London. So we've taken Café de Paris, And now we have the Leo London here, the dinner show, and yeah, very, very exciting, you know, to be able to provide a full experience through the night. So I think looking at that, looking back at COVID, whilst it was difficult, I think, you know, taking the risk of making the investments for the future, I think is was key for us. And I think that, you know, risk taking is something that is at the heart of vision and leadership, really. And of course, you just don't, it's not like, you know, you're going to a casino or something. You know, you do the research and you understand what the risks are, and then you go ahead, and that allowed us to use, you know, through the period of COVID as a more positive thing to do. It kept everyone employed and, you know, and with new projects coming online. And so now when people are sort of coming back to the market, we're already up and ready and, you know, and we're running. So.
Yeah. Interesting. I was chatting to entrepreneur Simon Gardner recently for the show, and he's had a recruitment business that he's taken to 100 million. In 13 years, 100 million revenue annually. And he was saying, like, during COVID, you know, they were going up against, you know, huge recruitment companies that have been around since the dawn of time. And he said, you know, when everybody else was like furloughing, everybody said, yes, but we furloughed those who were part-time or what it really, you know, suited them. But he said, I use this as the opportunity to actually kind of, you know, sharpen my axe, you know, so that when the doors reopened, we were ready. We were already exploring new markets that we could go into. We were going up against, you know, we'd have 16 people in the sales team. We were going up against organizations that had 100 to 1,000 people in the sales team, because we knew we could compete because we had that time to you know, to bide and do our research and come again, really. So I think those businesses that have been really successful at the back of the back of COVID have done just what you say. I remember seeing literally a couple of weeks ago going past on a boat in Barcelona, the Pasha Club there.
Yeah, yes.
But it reminded me when you're talking about Leo, and I haven't been to Leo, but I'd obviously love to go next time I'm in London. Reminded me of a venue I went to in Amsterdam called Supper Club, and that was being served food, and it was an element of fancy dress with all of the staff there. And then, you know, we weren't expecting this, and there was a DJ, and generally, as the evening went on, the beats got faster and faster, and then they threw open these massive doors to a nightclub, and we were just like, ah, away we go, you know. And like you said, you didn't have to go out and queue again. You saw the people queuing to get in the club, but we were already in there, and you kind of felt like you'd won, you know.
No, and you know, we're very lucky in Ibiza. Leo has been a great success. It's been around for a while. I mean, it opens and it's full already, you know, for the season. I mean, 80 to 90% of our customers in the opening weeks and closing weeks are, you know, have been before. I mean, the amount of repeat business we have there is staggering. And instead of taking them for granted, we constantly reinvest in the show. And this year, for the first time, the entire show is brand new, right? Like the one in Ibiza. And, and you know, typically in business, you say, okay, that one's making money, just let it run and let's focus on something else. But, you know, that's just the start of something going wrong, right? So you've got to, so we reinvested and we redone the show there. And then, you know, we moved the show around to the different locations. We're now in Mykonos, Palma, Mallorca, like I said, London, Ibiza. We open in Dubai next year, and then, you know, we've done pop-ups in Vegas, which are hugely successful.
I bet.
We're looking to do one now. I think the key difference is that this isn't just any dinner show. I mean, the artists are sort of award-winning, you know, actually can be from Broadway or the theater here, and hugely successful, but, you know, are happy to join our family and you know, and see the world as a result, similar to joining Virgin, I suppose.
Yeah, indeed. And that, you know, original vision by Ricardo, was that an international vision at the time? Did he?
No, I don't know. I mean, he was, you know, He was focused on Pasha in Ibiza. He did want the brand to travel. Mm. He didn't want to necessarily travel himself.
Right.
And so he signed, you know, several sort of franchise agreements around the world, including here in London.
Right.
But what that meant was, you know, the experience of a customer in Pasha, wherever, Pasha London, was not the experience they would get in Ibiza. So, you know, that's one of the things that I changed. So we came away from all of that, and we have, you know, and now we only have two franchises that are extremely well run. One, the one you said in Barcelona, and another one in Munich, and we don't have any others. And then the brand that we do use is Leo. And that is traveling around the world. But again, we control the customer experience. We control, you know, so it's our venue.
Yeah.
Rather than a franchised or licensed venue.
I see. Okay, interesting. And I remember going to Pasha in London as well. Yeah. And when you go in, it's not the same experience as when you had in Ibiza, you start questioning.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay.
So the vision is, so the vision has changed in that respect. But also, I think that, you know, again, you know, Ricardo must, genius as he was, and great guy. And, you know, we've had to, I alluded to it at the start, we've spent money on the club again in Ibiza, where, you know, it makes money. There's no real reason to do it. But as a result, we've doubled based on the changes we've made, which was to increasing the dance floor, reducing the VIP, increasing the sight lines, refreshing the lineup, the residencies, the marketing around the world and the events that we do. All that has led to a doubling of the financial performance of Pasha. So, you know, all that has been a change. Yeah, it does work. It does work.
What do you perceive then as, you know, talking about trying to get the brand to travel? What do you think the essence is, if you could, you know, bottle it for what Pasha kind of represents?
Yeah, I think Pasha's, you know, quite clearly the manifestation of the real Ibiza, right? So it's about openness, freedom of expression, creativity, artistry, that sense of freedom that you get when you're in Ibiza. They don't, you know, in Ibiza, you don't necessarily like being, well, anywhere in the world, you don't like necessarily being put in a box or in any way. So you can do this, but you can't do that, etc. And Pasha, you know, even in the VIP, it's very loose. You know, everyone knows each other and it's all quite familiar. So I think if we're able to, only when we're able to capture that essence, would we take the brand everywhere. So you come to Leo London, it's not, you know, a new development. It's 95 years old, so it's older than Pasha. It was bombed in the war and rebuilt, right?
Yeah.
And so it has history there. So, you know, we have reason to be there because we're bringing cabaret dinner show back to, you know, the original venue in London. So, and we do that with our artists and with the creativity and all that. So we're trying to bring those very elements that I spoke about to a genuine, you know, a place with history.
Yeah,
and if we combine the two, then I think you have an Ibiza experience. You'll see.
Indeed. Like I said, over 50 years in any business, you're going to have challenges, and clearly, the pandemic was one of them. In your tenure, like the last 7 years, what would you say has been the biggest challenge you've had to overcome in the business as a leader of the business?
Yeah, of course, you know, for anyone in hospitality, COVID's been the biggest, but we did talk about that. I think, trying to use that time, just as your friend did as well, right, to reset and figure out strategically what's important and what you want to look like when you come out of COVID. I think that was important. But at the same time, I think, you know, going to an island and sort of understanding that you are a guardian of the brand rather than the owner of the brand, right? I think is very important for a brand like Pasha, and listening to you know, what people have to say, not just people on the street, but also in your business. They've been doing it for years. You know, I remember when we reopened post-COVID at Pasha, I said to one of the managers, I said, okay, why don't you double your usual sort of training schedule prior to the opening? And he said, well, why would you do that? And I said, well, because you obviously got new people that are going to come back, you know, post-COVID, because during COVID, people leave. And he said, Sanjay, but we don't have a single new person. I mean, it's everyone's back.
No way.
Everyone's back.
100%.
100% retention post-COVID is just unheard of.
Yeah.
And everyone was so happy. I mean, I remember, you know, the hair on the back of my head still neck still stands when I think about like the opening party, 28th of April, 2022. It was just nuts.
I was going to say that must have been some event.
Yeah, it was fantastic. and we've outdone it this year. So
yeah,
it shows you how things evolve and how things change. But I think, you know, this goes to, something that's very close to my heart, right? Like, so, yeah, we talked about vision and communication, but as part of that vision, it's not just something that comes to you. It's something that you pick up, that you observe, and how does that work? That vision, for me at least, is in traveling, is in reading, you know, and understanding, and listening. And I think that listening, you know, takes different forms, but I think that is critical. If that has been critical for me in driving my my vision and creativity for this industry, and then listening is, you know, so important that, you know, even once you've got your vision, you've got to communicate it, because if you don't communicate it well enough, then you just drive yourself crazy or have to do it all yourself.
Yes, exactly. No one buys in.
Yes, no one buys in. And then you can't communicate by like flashy PowerPoint or, you know, it depends which industry you're in. But, you know, yeah, it's about understanding, you know, trying to communicate and motivate people at different levels. So whether it's a kitchen porter all the way to one of your sort of VIP managers, you know, and understanding the problems they have and how and why your vision is, you know, how that will address the various concerns that they have and how they all sort of line up to get to that point. So I think some of the stuff that's really important to me, and, you know, I've had for a long time, not just developed over Pasha, probably refined for what works at Pasha.
Yeah, no, it's interesting because, and I'll always say this, like, we've done over 500 interviews for this show over the last 7 years, you know, everybody from like a Ted Baker founder, you know, Ray Kelvin, you know, through to like Lush, another like billion-dollar brand. And they all say the hardest thing to get right is hiring good staff. But the second hardest thing becomes keeping those staff. And, you know, to get 100% retention in any industry is phenomenal, especially in hospitality.
Yeah, that's the power of the brand. Yeah,
power of the brand. Yeah. Interesting. And how have you, like, you know, we used to go for that period in time, used to go to Ibiza, you know, every single season. And then when we come home, and I was living in Fulham and Wimbledon at the time, our club was home that we used to go to, like, in the 90s. But how do you avoid the fate of like a home where there's rumours of, you know, drug use and all these kinds of things when you're in that kind of industry? How do you avoid the fate of that? Because that many clubs have suffered that fate, yet you're 50 years strong and still going and have avoided anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very serious question and topic. I think, you know, on our side, we address the issue with, you know, training of our staff. They understand, you know, zero tolerance policy. We work very closely with the police. And, you know, our head of security, you know, is ex-police, but right. You know, we're there to help them, and they're there to help us, and you know, we're very responsible in that way, ensuring that that it is clear to to everyone within the group that it's not part of our culture, right? Like we're there to entertain and to give people a good time by you know giving them a great experience by the music that they listen to and so it's more about their personalities and how you entertain them. Rather than anything, you know, anything synthetic. It's and yes, of course, you know, through training and through discipline, etc., we're able to, you know, have to make examples of zero tolerance. You know, but yeah, it works, and people buy into it. But it's a tough subject, yeah.
Must be because, you know, that many programmes over the years that you've seen on British TV of, you know, Brits going over there and literally going completely, you know, over the top, you know, excess, et cetera. And then you've got that relationship, obviously, with the council, I guess, on the island and the police. And it's a balancing act, isn't it? Because they want the revenue that tourism brings, but equally they don't want the island to be, you know, full, you know, portraying a bad image to the outside world, do they? So yeah. You've got your part to play, I guess, within that and the other.
No, very true. I mean, I think for us, also the people that are coming to Pasha, you know, are there for the music. I mean, it's, you know, the tickets, at the entry level, we try to make it as affordable as possible, but they're spending real money, right? Which they've worked hard to earn, spending real money to be at the club, and they want to have a good time at the club, and you know, and listen to their favorite DJ or be part of, you know, one of our parties or the Flower Power party or whatever, you know, one of our owned parties, and so that remains the motivation for someone to go to Pasha. Because the memories they collect there is what they keep. You know, everybody talks about the first time at Pasha and what happened at Pasha and the fact that they bought the T-shirt with the cherries on. Everyone's got a T-shirt with the cherries on. I mean, you don't have a T-shirt with other brands on them.
No, no.
Yeah. So I think it's about the experience and we're lucky that our, you know, clients see that.
Yeah, and what struck me the first time I went to Pasha as well, that compared to, you know, the big warehouse clubs like the Manumissions and the Amnesias, it was a different type of clientele that it appeared. And I didn't, you know this at the time, but just noticing it with friends that, one, it wasn't like an 18, 21-year-old audience. It was an older audience, but it was also appeared to be a mix of Spanish and international, not just 18 to, you know, 29-year-old Brits, for example, and Germans, you know.
It's still the case. I mean,
is it? Yeah.
Yeah, we have a very diversified sort of client portfolio from different countries and of course, they all add to the wonderful, you know, experience and atmosphere there. But it's a more, it's an older crowd for sure. But it's across all the age groups. So you know, you go to a Flower Power, which is like 60s and 70s music. You have like parents there with their kids. I mean, kids above the age of 18, of course. You know, all of them enjoying themselves together. Maybe, you know, the parents in VIP and the kids in GA or something like that. I mean, my kids would never go into the VIP. They're always in GA.
Right. No, we definitely got to the stage where it was like, we're only, this is like my other friend, we're only going if we're going like VIP, you know, you want to sit down and enjoy it at your own pace. And, you know, dip in and dip out, kind of attitude.
I know, we do have tables in the VIP, not so many chairs.
Right, okay. Brilliant. And, you know, you obviously have had the history of Pasha, you know, intertwined into your own story. Mm-hmm. When would you say, when you kind of look back, when would you say was like the turning point or one of the big turning points where Pasha truly became iconic? Would you say it was like back in the 80s, 90s, or was it the 2000s when the bigger labels came in and everything just got amplified, didn't it? And then we're on the dawn of the internet and social media and everything's more, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Accessible.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I really think that the different stages are quite quite important as Pasha sort of evolved through those years. And it's almost sort of an exact sort of 10 years apart in each time. So, you know, every decade was different, and moving through each one was critical. And if you hadn't moved from one to the other, you would have been left behind.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And whether you're sort of the last one to move or the first one to move or almost make the move happen, right? Like when, you know, going backwards, if, you know, the move from EDM to sort of underground music, I mean, it wasn't in big clubs before and Pasha made that move and it was hugely, hugely successful. You know, the kind of clients and customers we have, it's more suited to that, which is why you don't have the 18 to 21.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Like,
so I think in every sort of decade, there's been something that's been important. And I think, and that is key to longevity. You know, you don't, like you said, you don't have nightclubs that are 50 years old, right? They all sort of 1, 2, 3 years, well done. And then you sort of rebrand or you get shut down because of problems and you stop investing or you forget what's important to you. And here, I think innovation, like, you know, freedom of expression, openness, all that just keeps getting sort of reiterated into training at Pasha. So, you know, I'm sure over the next, as we get to, you know, 2030, there'll be something else and we move on from there. So I think for the company itself, I think Ricardo's stepping back in 2017, which is when I came on, I think was quite a big move from sort of a family-owned business to a more institutionally-owned business. Policies and procedures, processes, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, clients have, you know, have enjoyed, have appreciated. And maybe there was some cynicism, perhaps, you know, when you've been around for a while.
Change
always brings some amount of cynicism. But now from the back of the VIP, I can see the DJ, which is great news.
And who makes a decision like you say, to go from like EDM and you might have your Steve Aokis or your Armin van Buren's and now you move back to kind of more underground music. Who kind of makes that decision within the organization?
Yeah, we have a couple of fantastic music directors that you know, have their ear to the ground or ear to the underground and know what's going on. But it's something that we see and through the winter, you know, constantly travel, whether it's in Tulum or Miami or Burning Man or, you know, wherever you see what's up and coming. And you know, you have 7 days, obviously 7 days in the week, and, you know, we have a program which has residencies. So you have, you know, Monday repeats with that kind of music. And now we have sort of outdoor venues as well. We've opened a new one this year. In fact, I'm heading to Ibiza tomorrow for our closing party at our new.
Don't make me jealous.
At our new outdoor venue.
Party.
and that allows us to test, new styles and new types of music.
Where is the outdoor venue then?
It's in the Beni Musa Hills, towards San Antonio, up on the hills. So you used to go like 360.
Oh, wow. Okay.
360 view from there. It's it's great. It's like it's an oasis almost, and it's big. So even though, you know, you can have 2,000-3,000 people, it doesn't feel claustrophobic. And it's open air, right? Like so and it's called El Cielo, so the sky. And some great events there. So I'm there for that tomorrow.
And how long are you there for?
Just for tomorrow, and then I'm back.
Okay.
I'm back here for Leo. You know, it's a busy schedule. We've got Nick Fanciulli, another famous DJ, playing at Leo London on the 29th on Friday. So you can be back for that.
Nice. And is Pasha currently where you would like it to be as CEO, and having come in 7 years ago, having an understanding of what the original vision was, opening, different brands under the group as well. Leo sounds fantastic. Yeah, interesting to know. Is it where you want it to be? And is there anything more you'd like to do?
Yeah, it's a great question.
It's a long question, yeah, probably. Yeah,
no, I think I am so happy with, you know, what we've achieved in these 7 years, and you know, the business has doubled compared to 19, which no one really in hospitality can say. Mm. And we've achieved that, you know, with innovation and creativity and investing in our clients and in our product. So I'm very happy with where that is. I think maybe, you know, some ancillary stuff that we can do around, because our community, the Pasha community, is so widespread, and to be in touch with them like throughout the year, not in some sort of membership, but like a community where, mm. you know, you don't necessarily have to pay for it, but you know, we're all sort of kept together with news, information, new releases, music, you know, using music as a tool to, because it is becoming, Pasha is becoming a bit of a sort of lifestyle. You know, we also have a fashion label, which, yeah. The t-shirts with the cherries and a little bit more. And,
why wouldn't you? Yeah.
So being able to connect, I think the community is one of the projects that I'm working on. And also, more work around ESG. I know it's a bit of a, you know, cliche, but hospitality historically haven't been at the forefront of doing things that are sort of sustainable and Pasha, you know, I want to make sure that Pasha is a trendsetter there as well.
Yeah.
So I think around technology, connecting the community, the Pasha community, and further work around sustainability and looking after the island that gave us Pasha.
Being the custodian as you are.
Correct.
Last couple of questions. Share with us one of your favourite Pasha memories. Difficult, I'm sure, but...
Yeah, I think I told you like the full circle story, which for me is always front of mind, and which is why I brought it up. The other being sort of, you know, that's within Pasha, and outside of Pasha, the story of the owner of Dragon Eye, sort of, you know, the Leo moment. I think that right. is quite stunning to know how far the concepts travel. But I think, you know, for me, the reopening, you know, when we opened post COVID on the 28th of April, I think that event was just unbelievable. I mean, all our sort of regular clients returned and we had some new clients and it's just a fantastic moment coming together after such a difficult time. And no one really knew who was more grateful, right?
Like,
us for the clients or the clients for, you know, for us to be putting on such an amazing show. And we're very lucky to have not just the talented DJs, but you know, the staff that make it all work, and people come back and feel comfortable at Pasha, because of course it's a house, but the house usually has a family, and the family is, you know, the staff that have been working there for many years. So, yeah, Pasha definitely wouldn't be where it is today without the people that work there.
Nice, and I always ask my guests as well, in your own career, this could be, or it could be just your career in Pasha, has there been any screw it, just do it moments, like an aha moment that took you from kind of where you were to where you wanted to be?
Yeah, I'd say for me, the big moment, two big moments, I'd say. One was sort of, in finance, private equity, and knowing that my heart was in hospitality, but you know, you get used to a certain lifestyle in banking, and to say, you know what, I know it's the most it's one of the most competitive industries to be in, and there are more failures than successes. But screw it, I'm just going to do it, and moved across into hospitality. And then when one thing led to another, and, you know, I had the chance of working full time through a summer, which meant, you know, you know, being awake every single night through the summer. It was 140 days of 6 a.m., sort of going to sleep at 6 a.m. With my family here, were coming across once in a while to see me. That was a big decision, but... And I just thought, again, screw it, let's just do it.
I love it. Fantastic. Well, look, Sanjay, it's been super cool getting you around. I knew this was going to be a good conversation, so I'm glad we found a date that fitted into your schedule,
which
I thought my schedule used to be crazy at Virgin Atlantic, and then you realise that those frequent flyers are flying way more than you are.
Correct.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Any tips for sleeping, jet lag, anything like that?
Yeah, I never stay more than one night or two nights. So I try and stay on the original time zone. Or if I'm going to Miami, it's more difficult because I need to stay up at night. But, you know, you just do it for two nights and you come back. I mean, not to plug Whoop, but I've got Whoop that tells me I need to sleep often or not. And, you know.
I listen to the Whoop podcast, funnily enough, as well. I'd like to interview the founder of Whoop. Yeah. It's very cool bit of kit, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, it's great. So yeah, I mean, don't get, you know, if you're not there for more than 2 days, then it's okay. It's manageable.
Amazing. Well, thank you very much indeed.
No, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks for watching this episode of Screw It, Just Do It. Let me know what you thought of it in the comments below this video, as this episode helped move you closer to where you want to be. All that I ask is that if you enjoyed this episode and that it's moved you closer to getting to where you want to be, that you share this episode so that it helps one other person do just the same. Just ask yourself what small action will move you forward to get you from where you are, then screw it and just do it. Until next time.